Here's to the paper pushers, the rush hour warriors, and the gotta get awayers. Trade the daily grind for a place to unwind, where you can rise with the tide and roll down the boardwalk, where you can eat french fries for lunch and ice cream for dinner, where your only commute is your walk to the beach, where every day feels like Saturday. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
I'm your host, Annie Bowles, and this is a bonus episode of News Du Jour. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of the individuals participating in the show and do not necessarily represent those of Sugar Free Media and News Du Jour podcast. This episode contains subject matters such as violence and graphic descriptions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi guys, I wanted to introduce to you Michelle Horton and Nikki Adamondo. They are two sisters whose lives were deeply affected by domestic violence, and Nikki herself is a criminalized survivor. Her story was the inspiration behind the bipartisan Oklahoma Senate Bill 1470 that we are endorsing and helping to champion. They offered to come on our show to share both of their stories to help us better understand why Senate Bill 1470 here in Oklahoma is so important and how domestic violence can have vast ripple effects. And just as a heads up, our episode today is going to be really focused on how these two sisters supported one another through what can only be described as a nightmare. We're not going to be going into the ins and outs of Nikki's life story or the case. All of that is chronicled in vast detail over on the Believe Her podcast. So what we're really going to talk about today is Nikki's experience, you know, leaving prison, what freed her, and how our bill here in Oklahoma can do the same for criminalized survivors throughout our state. Let's jump in. Hi, Nikki. Hi, Michelle. Where did you guys grow up, and what was it like growing up together?
Well, we grew up in the Hudson Valley of New York, which is halfway between New York City and Albany. And I feel like the simplest way to say it is that we grew up, we're 2 years apart. We grew up in the same house, but we had very different childhoods under the same roof. I think in general, we had a typical sibling relationship as two girls close in age. You know, we were close playmates as kids. We grew apart during our teenage years. And then when we became moms, we got super close.
I love that. As a mom myself, I can really, I feel like there's just a sort of, you know, unspoken bond between mothers. We all just get it. Can you tell us a little bit about what went on in your childhood and what Nikki went through as a child and how that abuse kind of built up and led towards further abuse down the line?
So I experienced some childhood trauma, and Michelle's childhood experiences were different, which probably shaped our sense of safety in the world and how we connected with people. Yeah. Are you comfortable talking a little bit about, like, what happened? So I was young. I was 5, and it was someone known to me and my family. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't understand until more recently is that more than 50% of women who are abused as adults have experienced childhood abuse as well. Yeah, the data is very clear that sexual victimization in childhood significantly increases the likelihood of sexual victimization in adulthood. Even the CDC states that without treatment for early childhood abuse, especially sexual abuse, violence usually recurs and escalates in frequency and severity, which, you know, we obviously see in Nikki's case. And in trial, they tried to make that seem like it was an, you know, how could this happen? And it was so rare. But if you really look at the statistics, that is what is most common.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have April, of course, her case we discussed very recently. But as like a true crime content consumer, you see that pattern over and over again. So we definitely know that that is very common. So do you want to talk about like how you met Chris, Nikki, and sort of like what your early romance was like with him and what was your first impression of him?
Yeah, well, our relationship started when we were young. We were newly in college. And in the course of our 9-year relationship, there was, I think, a subtle power and control dynamic that I didn't recognize at first, which continued to increase after the birth of our children. And by the time I had some awareness about this dynamic, I was trapped in an abusive relationship.
Yeah. So how would you say the abuse began with Chris? And Michelle, you know, what did you know about the abuse as Nikki's sister?
Well, I can't really speak to how it began. You could maybe speak to that. But I know, from what I know, it was sexual in nature, which as her sister, I didn't see. That wasn't something we talked about, like, especially given her childhood, that just wasn't a topic that I really went towards. And I, you know this, Annie, but I have a book that's out. And so in the book, I kind of go back to childhood and talk about the signs of the abuse that my mom saw and that even I knew in a way, but it was something that like we didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. For me, you know, I was a kid, so when I became an adult, it was like, well, when Nikki's ready to talk to me about it, she will. So sex in general just wasn't something we talked about. And, you know, anyone who's in a sexually abusive relationship, those are not injuries that people see on the outside. That is something very intimate and it's behind closed doors. So because that was the nature of it, it was able to be hidden for a long time. And you know, Nikki and I, we were kind of talking about it yesterday. The escalation of abuse, like when she started getting forensic nurse exams and needing to go to the hospital, and that there were people in her life who were helping her navigate the system and the system itself was involved. That coincided exactly perfectly with my marriage. I was married to an addict and like it was life-threatening and my life was completely consumed by that. So while she was going through what she was going through, I was in a very different situation of abuse that I kind of was like we were talking about earlier, we had different ways of looking at the world, whereas she was hypervigilant and fearful of asking for help for all sorts of reasons. I was like, I need help. Everyone help me. So I was like pulling focus towards me and my situation, which contributed to me being blind to what was happening with her. And then when she was arrested, I had no idea the abuse that she was going through. And I immediately got pulled into the circle of women who had been trying to help her. And as soon as they told me what had been happening, it was like light bulbs started going on. And I was like, oh my God, all of these things, the bruising, the shoulder dislocation, all of these things that were like separate in my mind or just unexplained or confusing had context. And in hindsight, it was very obvious. But yeah, it was like very embarrassing, to be honest, to be sitting in these rooms with people telling me who my sister was, all of this danger she was in, the high lethality that was happening in the home with my young niece and nephew. And I was just completely oblivious to it.
Yeah, I can imagine that was so tough. I have a close sister and, you know,
I don't know if we would talk about sex. Like we really, I think it's tough to talk about in a lot of families. So let's talk. So Nikki, this is the first interview you've given after leaving prison. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So maybe we could talk about like what it's been like coming out of prison and what the process of like leaving prison was like for you.
Yeah, it's been really just so surreal to be home with my kids, and it's what I daydreamed about all day for the years that I was in a cell waiting to come home. I think it's going to be a process of adjusting and healing. I'm still really in the early stages of that and kind of like learning what it feels like to be free.
Hey, pet parents, are you searching for the perfect place for your dog to play? Check out Camp Bow Wow. Our safe and supervised doggy daycare and boarding ensures your pup gets the socialization they crave while giving you peace of mind. With our certified staff and clean and spacious facilities, your dog will have a blast making friends and staying active. Join the Camp Bow Wow Pack today. Your first day is free. Visit us at campbowwow.com. Franchise opportunities available.
Here's to the paper pushers, the rush hour warriors, and the gotta get awayers. Trade the daily grind for a place to unwind, where you can rise with the tide and roll down the boardwalk, where you can eat french fries for lunch and ice cream for dinner, where your only commute is your walk to the beach, where every day feels like Saturday. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Yeah, watching your videos, Michelle and Nikki, like, it just gives us so much hope for April here in Oklahoma and, like, every other criminalized survivor that we're fighting for every day. So you're, just so everybody knows in the audience, our bill was really inspired by Nikki's case and the bill in New York that resulted in her freedom. So can we talk a little bit about the Domestic Violence Survivors Justice Act in New York, how that came about, and how it ended up affecting Nikki's case?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to talk about how it affected you personally?
So the Domestic Violence Survivors Justice Act essentially saved my life in the long run. After my trial, the judge imposed a 19-year to life sentence, meaning I could potentially spend the rest of my life in prison, but at a minimum 19 years. And then that judge denied my original application under the DVSJA, despite having read and viewed and partially suppressed ample evidence of abuse, which was devastating, to put it lightly. The transcript of his sentencing statement to me is in my sister's book, where he ultimately denies my actual life experiences and refuses to apply the law. And then a few years later, an appellate court spoke to that issue, my DVSJA denial, and overturned the sentencing judge's decision, instead sentencing me under the law to 7.5 years.
Amazing. And really quickly, just a double tap like on that. When you went up for the second time, was it the new attorney that really made the difference in your case, or like what had shifted to make it result in a different outcome?
Yes. Yeah. So she was convicted by a trial judge, and then the law was passed days, maybe like a week, very, very soon after. She was convicted, it was signed into law. So it kind of felt like it was for her. And that was what we as advocates for Nikki were telling people, like, hey, you need to pay attention to this because you all fought for this law for 10 years. It took 10 years to get it passed.
Wow.
And you know, there's so many lives on the line, and this trial judge has the ability to either reinforce the law's intent or completely dilute the law and make it meaningless. So the thing is, the trial judge was then the person to oversee the DBSJA eligibility hearing. So she was convicted by a jury in April, and which really does tie the judge's hand. So the minimum he can sentence her is 15 years to life in New York. life sentence, like, period, with that verdict. So then in September of that year, September is when you had the eligibility hearing, and it was the same judge, same attorneys and the same judge in both of those scenarios, and he denied it. And then it kind of became an uproar, and we were able to make a lot of noise, and we also had new appellate attorneys. So I think the combination of having new attorneys, new judges, so new eyes on the whole case, there's just an inherent bias where you sat through a trial and you watched a jury give a verdict. Yeah. So I don't know how much that played into it. You know, I'm sure there were a lot of factors for why this judge decided not to use the law, but I think having new eyes on it and having it be a higher court outside of the county we were in, and that there was big time media campaign around it, played a huge factor in the appellate court saying, you know what, she is a poster child for this law. She was a victim of abuse, not just vaguely. She was a victim of abuse by the person who she killed. It was a contributing factor, and a sentence of 19 years to life is unduly harsh. So they resentenced her to 7.5 years. Mm.
That's amazing. And it's really encouraging to hear how pressure from society and the media, how that helped, because at the end of the day, it's easy to feel sometimes like, okay, the law is like black and white, like it's yes or no, and that public opinion doesn't really factor in. So I love hearing that we can make a difference in these cases, because I know there's a lot of people in our audience who really care about domestic violence victims and who want to raise their voices for these cases. So that's really optimistic for us. Talk to us about, Michelle, maybe like raising Nikki's kids. What was that process like, and making sure that they were in ample contact with their mom, and trying to bridge that gap between their mom and, you know, being their aunt?
Yeah. So they were 2 and 4 when this happened. Wow. And when it happened, she was kept in a county jail for 9 months without being able to see her kids. We could have brought them in to visit her, but they were experiencing so much complex trauma. Yeah. That bringing them into a noisy, dirty, mostly male jail, where the rules were so strict that they had to sit on their bottoms, not put their feet on the seats, not touch her, like, it was not possible for us to bring the kids to see her without causing more damage.
Yeah.
I go through the whole trajectory in the book, but there's a brief period where Nikki's released on habeas corpus, which just means that she was kept in jail for too long without an indictment. So she comes home for 12 days and they reconnect. And after that, we realized we really couldn't keep them apart, because even though they couldn't see her, which was very damaging, they talked to her every day. Yeah. And I was fortunate that I could accept the collect calls. You know, these are expensive things that a lot, yes, of people can't afford. Mm-hmm. So I made sure that every time Nikki called, I answered. You know, there were times, it was so stressful. And I actually put some of the audio clips of their phone calls in the audiobook version of the book, because I wanted people to hear, first of all, how small they were, but you can hear the despair and the longing, yeah, in their voices. And I think it's really important for people to hear, because we kind of like make it abstract that it's like, oh, these are people in prison, but these are humans, they're mothers and their children, and they're separated, and it's heart-wrenching. So yeah, to like kind of sit at the crossroads of that and be between a mom who can't get to her kids and kids who are screaming for their mom and not be able to do anything was horrific. And also when they were able to see her, we ended up getting play therapy in the county jail, which was really important for all of them to process. And seeing how, like, especially the little one, Faye, she was 3-4 years old, how she would transform it into these incredible, like, imaginative play scenarios in this bleak room. It really showed that despite so much pain and so much that was wrong, there was this bond between them that was inspiring, quite honestly, and that we have the capacity to still love each other and to still stay connected through all the obstacles that the system throws at you. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Also, that experience is really uncommon. There was nobody else getting play therapy there. So I would be leaving a unit of women who missed their kids, didn't even know where they were some of the times, weren't allowed to talk to them, didn't have family able to take calls, or maybe their children went into the system and I was going down to visit with mine. So as hard as that was, it was so bittersweet. I was really one of the lucky ones who actually had that. Most moms don't. I lived with hundreds of women in prison who have been there and will continue to be there and don't have any idea what their kids look like anymore. They don't have contact with them. And my sister brought my kids to me every week in prison, just about. And that's not the common experience. It's really hard for people on the outside to keep that connection going.
Yeah, not everybody has a Michelle. So
even with the resources and the help, it was hard for me.
Yeah, you guys have me crying over here. In case you guys can see this, the audience can't. Y'all aren't crying, but I'm crying over here. As a mom, that is just, I think every mom who's listening right now is their stomachs in knots just thinking about that. I think separating a mom from their children in any way, shape, or form is violent. You know, there's just no other like word for it. It's traumatizing for everybody involved. So I'm really sorry that you went through that and you didn't deserve it. So can we talk about like why you chose to come on this interview today? Like, why are you out there advocating and what was the inspiration for your work that you're doing now?
Yeah. Okay. So I really haven't been taking interviews yet, or told my own story at this point, but I think because part of what's so re-traumatizing is telling your story in court and having it not be believed. But this really just, I felt really pulled to do this because as a criminalized survivor who was resentenced under a new law and knowing that other states like Oklahoma don't have a law like the DVSJA yet, I just want to express how life-changing New York's law was for me and my family. I mean, I'm home now. My kids have their mom back, and survivors everywhere deserve that.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday, and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion, and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling, and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And for me, I am regularly doing interviews because the way it, like, when I started writing my book, Nikki, it was in 2020 and Nikki had a life sentence. And we were told that her appeal had less than a 1% chance of being successful. So I had to accept that perhaps this was for life and I had an experience that I witnessed that needed to be told.
Yeah.
Then she ended up getting it resentenced and then she got 6 months off of her sentence, which put her at January. And then my book came out in January, which was just wild. Like, never did I expect to be taking interviews and also have Nikki with me. And I always said, like, I had a feeling that she wasn't going to want to have a camera stuck in her face as soon as she got home. But I always said, you know, the space is here for you. Like, now I have this platform and I am inspired to speak out because, you know, everything that I experienced and saw, I want to tell. Mm-hmm. And I want to speak for people who can't have their voice heard, but now Nikki can. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated. A lot of times, you know, she has to find safe spaces to start talking. And I think this was an opportunity where there's something really real happening. There's a bill that is being pushed through. And I know there's something in her I see that lights up when she can help people and she thinks that her speaking has a purpose.
Yes.
And, you know, every day I'm very aware of the time. I look at the clock and I'm like, oh, the girls are locking in now. I know exactly what they're feeling. I was there and now I'm out here. So I'm deeply grateful. And I also have this like this guilt that they're still there and I'm out here. So it's really the only thing I can do for all of the people in there still waiting to be seen and be heard is to just share that experience because it's so widespread. It's not just here in New York. It's over to you guys and everywhere else. And people, I'm hoping that people realize that this is not like a rare thing. It's very rare that I'm out. But the fact is that there are so many women who are criminalized for surviving and they're ripped away from their kids, which is the most primal pain that you could ever imagine. And there are families out here who are really just trying to pick up those pieces.
Yeah. And I think it's important that people understand that women like Nikki, like this is the standard for survivors. These are women who survived abuse and now are surviving state violence. And they're in a very similar abusive situation. Yes. This time the power and control is held by the state. Mm-hmm. It's important for people to just humanize these survivors and don't just see them as like inmate numbers. Like these are all individual women who deserve healing and being incarcerated is the absolute worst place for them to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nikki or April in her episode said, he had me for a year. The state has had me for 25. And that just definitely hit home to me. Just the magnitude of that. 'Cause 25 years. And like you said, like, you are making a difference. Like we've seen in your case that media pressure and people raising their voices together made a difference. And so we can use that and use this episode and, you know, all the advocacy that we're doing online to help raise our voice for April and other people. So I wanted to see if you would share with us what it was like reuniting with your kids, like that moment. What was going through your head and like what was on your heart and what was that like?
I still haven't even really processed all of this. They still, every night when I put them to bed, they're like, I can't believe this is really happening. Like, you're really here.
Yeah.
But also, it feels like you never left. And I think we kind of share in that. It was dreamlike, you know? And I know all of the women that are sitting there right now in prison, that is all they think about. You have so many hours to lay there and stare at the wall and just like daydream and imagine. And if you stop imagining, what do you have left? You know, you have to, and I know that they are too. So to actually walk out those doors, it felt like a dream. It really did.
Amazing. Well, you're so brave for being here today. We really appreciate you. Also, Michelle, where can people find your book and what can they expect in your book?
Yeah, so you can find the book anywhere you buy books. Independent bookstores are obviously the best place. Bookshop is kind of like an online independent bookstore, kind of. But you can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, like anywhere that's convenient. You can expect to get a story that isn't typically told when it comes to domestic violence and criminalized survival. It's the story from inside a family and a real intimate inside look at what the human experience is that isn't told in headlines and in true crime stories. And I'm hoping that people will be moved by it to take action in their communities and maybe change the way that they look at themselves or their families, children, that's my hope, at least.
Amazing. Well, we wanted to encourage everybody to sign the petition in the show notes today for Senate Bill 1470. That is one way that we're measuring all of the, you know, support for this bill, and we're pointing to that for, you know, lawmakers to see. So if you guys wouldn't mind signing the petition, there's also at that link a ton more information about the bill in case you're wanting to dive into that. But we also have a bonus episode with criminalized survivor April Wilkins, as well as Colleen McCarty, who actually wrote this piece of legislation. So if you guys are wanting more information, that's where you can find it. And be sure to follow We Stand With Nikki on Instagram to follow Nikki's journey, you know, as she continues her life with her kids and her advocacy work alongside Michelle.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use to listen. A rate and review on that platform or a shout out on social media would mean the world to us and help us to be able to keep creating the news du jour and reach more people who need a calmer space to consume the news. But the best way to support all of our work is to become a patron at www.patreon.com/sugarfreemedia, and that is also linked in our show notes. You can follow us on social media at newsdujour.podcast on both Instagram and TikTok. You can follow my personal account at It's Annie Bowles on both platforms as well. Any little noises you may hear in the background are my rescue pup. He has a little separation anxiety and always records with me. We appreciate you listening and look forward to telling you about the news again next time on News du Jour.
Broadcasting from...
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday, and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion, and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling, and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.